You are listening to.
Listening to.
You are listening to.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
BlackIsOnline.com.
Right.
What's going on, y'all? It's your man Chris, one half of the Brothers Layman. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Black Is Break, brought to you by the Black Is Network. So we finally wrap up our discussion that started with transgenderism and gender versus sexuality, led into this last episode about identity, struggling with that, is it chosen by God, and I would recommend that you guys check those two out if you haven't so far to get an idea of how the conversation has gone. And this one, we're going to be wrapping things up. But before we do, I do want to read some feedback that we got on the last episode. This is from Sun Love. She left it on the show page. Just wanted to say that speaking about the Christian idea of God as if that is all really made it hard to listen to anything else that Malcolm said. To start with, if you don't believe in God, meaning the Christian idea, if you're an atheist, if you don't subscribe to God, really was so sad to hear yet again. We, black people, are of a variety of beliefs and they all deserve respect. If you are Muslim or Jewish, you are literally talking about the same God figure. If you're another faith, you can still have principles and beliefs that are worthy of respect. And finally, to try to wipe over something as strong as literally feeling like you aren't your true self with some religion-based talk is why many people have been running fast from the black church. What it sounds like you are saying is that people should fight internal lifelong battles with themselves so that they look right in the eyes of other believers. That's simply incorrect thinking. So, Sun Love, thank you for the feedback on that. You know, Malcolm is a very open-minded brother. We appreciate that. We love him for that. But we know he is strong in his Christian beliefs, and we knew that with this particular topic that some of that was going to come up. You know, he's strong in it, and he doesn't mind sharing it, and we appreciate that. We love him for it. And as we do on this show and around this table, you know, you bring your ideas, and if somebody has some feelings about it or wants to disagree, they bring it. And I know Rada was bringing it to him that night, and so with some other people, you know, but you know, it's all love at the end of the day. We try to educate each other, you know, share our beliefs, you know, but at the end of the day, once the mics go off, you know, we all fam. But I want to thank you again for taking the time to leave that message. We did let him know that we did get some feedback, and we'll let you know what he says. Hopefully, he gets a chance, in the near future when he comes back on to address it. But, you know, that's how we do. We like having these kind of discussions and the back and forth and, you know, challenging each other's opinions and beliefs all in a good way and all in a positive way as well. So thanks again. So we wrap things up and getting a little bit deeper into relationships and marriage, challenging the roles, shifting your philosophy, playing to your strengths, and jumping in and out of happiness. You know, marriage is a big deal. And, you know, a lot of this identity is based in this subject we're talking about. So thanks again for checking it out. If you guys want to leave any feedback, you can go to the show page on blackisonline.com. Leave some feedback there. You can also reach us via email at kc@blackisonline.com. And you can leave a message on the hotline, 323-455-4219. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy. With the, you know, 1.5, with the number of black men who have gone, black women have begun to adjust to it. I don't think a large amount of black men have or want to adjust to it. I think all of them are gone. They're just like, okay, whatever. We just still going to play it. We still going to do what we do. I think women are being like, okay, all these men are gone. Opportunities for us have increased,
right?
we don't have to do all, we don't have to just do these roles. Now we can do this, this, that, and that. And I don't think as a community we've, and men in general have not just been like, okay, I see the change coming. Let me adjust to it. It feels like we're just like, oh, well, I like it the way it is, the way it used to be. And why can't we just, why can't women just go back to doing that? I'm like, well, we ain't, a person like, well, we ain't here. Like, we letting them raise the damn children who we not around. Not enough of us are around. And I'm like, well, if we ain't here and the women have to do everything, why are you mad that they're carrying the load? When I'm like, you don't want to carry the load. You okay with doing...
But can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's that they don't want to carry the load, or they haven't been encouraged to do it?
Or
because yeah. I've worked with incarcerated youth. I've worked with gang, young people in gangs. And what's amazing to me is they're so used to drinking water like this, right, with their hands cupped. Sometimes you just bring this in and they go, oh, shit, I didn't know you could do that. You know, so right, because they're so used to doing something like this, they don't even know this basic thing here called a cup. And so I wonder if, like, when I meet young black men in particular, who have either been incarcerated or are coming from a particular kind of background, you know, in education, they may call it at risk. I don't like that term, but they have certain challenges. A lot of times they're already walking into the room with a certain level of defeat because they haven't been shown path 2, 3, and 4, and 5 towards winning. So it's like when kids eat candy all their lives and the assumption is, well, they're only going to eat candy and chips for breakfast because that's all they know. And then you come in and you prepare a nice meal for them and they go, oh shit, this tastes good. Auntie, what's this? Broccoli and with olive oil. So my question is it that they don't want to, or they don't even know what they want because they haven't tasted it yet? You know?
My answer would be, out of that group, I think the majority don't know. And I think majority don't know. And I think if they were exposed to it, majority of them would probably adjust. But I do think, as with every group, there are some who are just like, no.
Are we talking about the black men who are not accepting? Is that who we're referring to?
Who are not raising their kids?
Yeah, like this.
Yeah, but just basically feeling like this. There's been this complaint in the community that we hear. I hear all these podcasts, every place else, that black women are now their ability to do. They have ability to do more roles, or how I call it, how I've been saying it is, they've now been given the opportunity to wear the king's crown, that they have the ability to wear. They can choose. They can choose to keep the queen's crown, or in certain instances they can, or they are forced to wear the hat of the king. And as men, we are only taught, or you know. In a sense, we only wear one crown, and
one hat.
If we're not allowed to wear the king's crown, what the hell? What do we do? And then I've always argued, if the guy doesn't wear that, are there some women who are going to be like, "Oh, word, you don't want to wear?" Like, I don't know how to adjust to you when you're not in that position.
If a man comes into the situation, automatically assuming he's not going to be the lead. He's not going to be the head.
From what he understands is what being the lead is. Yeah, which is those old, like, I'm basically, you following me. Every major decision I make, now that that's not the case, I'm not the breadwinner.
And I think that's the juxtaposition. I mean, it's like Kim talked about a square not being able to fit into a circle. And it is what it is. And both you, Chris, and Rod are right. Those situations do exist and they're prevalent. But the question is, how do we deal with them? Because a man does not raise his son to be accepting of what a woman may bring other than what, you know, that man believes a woman should bring. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not teaching my son to, you know what, when you grow up and marry a woman, if you like to cook and she likes to work, then you stay home and cook and let her work. I'm teaching my son what I do, you know, and the traditional role is what I know. But then there are not enough men teaching young boys that at the same time. And so, you know, out of women being forced into a situation, yeah, the single most educated group of people in this world today are black women, you know, in terms of advanced degrees and in terms of earning power. And this is a situation that did not necessarily come about because they earned the right. I mean, you did earn the right, but it wasn't because you worked hard and you aspired to be this. You were forced into a position and you made the best of it. And this is now what it's become, you know. And so now when I'm raising my son to be a man, I'm also raising my daughter to be independent so that she doesn't need a man.
That's funny.
You know? And
but you're not going to raise her to say that to men.
But you empower her to the point that...
Are you teaching your son to do dishes and laundry and all that other jazz?
Yeah.
Of course. Because they got to do that shit on their own.
His load, but,
as long as everybody knows how to take care of
him. But what I'm saying is that this is where the juxtaposition comes into play. It's like, you know, you're trying to force something together that's just not going to mesh. You know, you can't teach two different things. And that's what my father pretty much taught us. My father empowered my sister. On the one hand, he taught her that she could do anything and be anything. But at the same time, anytime she asks for something, he gives it to her. So it's like, well, you're going to be in a position where you can earn this yourself. But at the same time, you expect anytime you open your hand for something to be placed in it. And so if you are going to be, as a woman, a bread earner and the person who brings money and manages money and the roles are reversed, so to speak, then will you respect your man in the role that he plays? And I think it becomes difficult. So, yes, you can be the breadwinner, but does that mean I have no say? Or does that mean that now because you're earning the money, you get to determine how it's spent? And then
depends on when you were earning the money.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Right. And I have a friend who, as much as she likes to fight about gender roles and not following traditional gender roles, I had to call her out because she was making more than her drummer boyfriend. And she was talking to him like he was two. And I said, whoa, you know, because out of her mouth, she was saying that it should be okay that she made more money and, you know, here comes this laundry list. And I said, but you talk to him like he's a child. You don't talk to him like he's your equal. And so I do agree that even when we say that's what we want and do, a lot of people don't actually do it. They don't actually, when there's something that happens, when you're the person making the most money, you feel like you better to make the most decisions.
I mean, for me, it really comes down to also, you know, like, what is the vision for your household and who gets to lead that vision? I'm not saying that that everybody doesn't contribute to that vision, but eventually somebody's going to have to take the lead on making sure that something happens. And so the question is, who do you want to be in that role?
But right? Does it have to be the same person consistently and constantly?
It can change.
Yeah, it can change. I mean, depending on where you are in achieving that, right? In theory.
I don't believe that, okay. but that's fine. I believe that people can contribute to the way I believe as a Christian man is that God got me my family. So I'm not saying that my wife is not part of the equation. Yes, she's part of the equation, but I feel like God has placed me in this family to be the leader and to bring forth whatever the vision is for our family and to discuss that with my wife and to have input from my wife. But ultimately, it's my responsibility to make sure our family is taken care of. Now, whether that means that, like, we've discussed it and she's like, well, I got this gig and it makes more money, but it's part of our overall vision, that's fine. But whatever the case, it's my job to make sure that whatever is going to move forward our family, that I'm making sure that that is always happening. So, but in some people, that's why I feel like there may be a difference between people here and myself and obviously people at the table. But that's a question I have for everybody. It's like, do you feel like there is somebody who leads and is the sort of visionary for your family? Because, you know, in all structures in society, you have somebody who leads and is a visionary for something. And
I think someone's family, it could. When one person is clearly the motor and the dominant force, for me, it just doesn't necessarily have to be me. If Jamie was better at something, I would be like, yo, can you take this? Because
I'm saying, because Jamie could be good at finances, cooking, and driving, and Jamie can absolutely head that. But at the end of the day, if Jamie is like, if Tash says, I can't believe I interchanged those two. That's so funny.
That's okay. He does that all the time. With Tash.
I wouldn't do that. Of course. If Tash is like, look, this is where we need to be. This is where I like to see us be. This is where, you know, if you are discussing those things.
I would make sure that it's not me being controlling and that it's actually. And you know what? How about this? If it was something that God spoke to me as a direction to lead the family, I'd be like, all right, God, I'll follow your lead. But make sure you give Jamie the message as well. You know what I'm saying? Like,
No, that is absolutely real. But see, that's what people don't realize is that Jamie should be receiving the same message from God.
And I would trust that she would.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the difference. Where that you don't have two people on the same page.
Shouldn't people just act from their strengths? Yeah. I mean, like, you know, to me, it's about what skills you bring to the table. Really, like, someone may have be better at financial planning. Someone may, maybe one of the parents or one of the partners is worked in education for a long time, so they know what works with children, and they have, you know, I mean, of course it's about a discussion, but it's like, identify what the strengths are and which strengths are going to come into play when we as a family have this particular challenge. And to me, it could be anybody. It could be anybody. The man or the woman, the woman or the woman, the man or the man, however that family decides, you know, what makes their family a family, it's about playing to the strengths. And I'm a person who actually believes in God. I'm not a Christian. I'm not. And I do believe in these messages. I do feel like I'm in communion with my Creator. And I would hope that what you said, Tash, would be on my partner's mind too, that they see that I can receive a message just as they can, you know, and that my input is just as important, and that my input is not, the input is not prioritized based on gender. It's just about being a human being at the table and saying, this family is important to me, and, you know, let's sit down and do it together, X, Y, Z. Because I have so many friends who have children, right? And they never really had the conversation of how are we going to raise these children. So they're constantly fighting about what they should be doing. Now, I don't want my child in ballet. I want my son to be in karate. How about before we make these kids, we discuss what each of our vision is, and then we can move forward together. So to me, it's just about having that communication, you know, with an individual who's honest about who the hell they are.
And see, I was thinking the same thing in regards to having a vision for the marriage. So, in response to you, brother, you might have a vision for the outlook of what your family, what you want it to be. But if you don't have a willing partner to go along with it, then it won't work. I feel like I believe that. I feel like you need to have, the conversation needs to happen with both partners in the relationship. One person cannot, in my opinion, be the visionary for the whole situation. Like, this is what we're going to do. This is the plan. This is your role. Get on board and boom. Two people have to come together and say, what do we want our life to look like? Okay, how do we go about creating that life for ourselves? and for the children that we plan to bring into this life that we're creating for ourselves. In order to get there, what do you need to do? What do I need to do? What help can you give me? What help can I give you? And then move forward trying to meet those goals. Because I've seen relationships. The reason why my family, why there's been generations of divorce is because there has been one person who tried to control the whole situation and be the dominating factor. It will never work that way. That's not balanced. That's not balanced. And so I feel like, and I always say to Chris, I feel like that's one reason why we've been able to stay together, and we've been together 10 years this year. Woo-woo. Woo! Married. Wow. 15 years together, period. But
that's a long time.
That's a long time. I think we got together when we were broken and have nothing. Mm. And we had an understanding of what it is that we wanted to do, and we didn't exactly know from the gate how we were going to get there, because we hadn't landed into the careers that we would eventually have. But it started with us just having an idea of what we wanted it to look like and building on that. And it wasn't one person's desire over another. It was like, this is what we want. And I feel like we stay in that space of communication. So I say all of that to say, you have to focus on your strengths. It has to be a two-person conversation. The vision has to be a two-person vision if you're in something that we call a couple. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you're not in a couple. Yeah, you in a dictatorship. And if it's a dictatorship, somebody's not going to be happy. You know? And unless you're just with somebody who was completely submissive, subservient, and that's where their comfort zone is. If you're with somebody who cannot think for themselves, because there are those people who prefer to have somebody make decisions for them, then that's who you choose as a partner. But you also know what goes along with having somebody like that.
But can we, and can I just
want to clarify, just okay, before you come in, I do want to clarify, I'm not saying yes, I agree with you that everybody has to contribute to that, because I certainly want God to be speaking to my wife to confirm anything that I've heard, and vice versa. Otherwise, I could be going out there on cray cray.
Right.
So I agree. But I will say this, that particularly, and I know everybody in here is not a Christian, but for those of people who are in the Christian faith, that there is an order, right? So there's no democracy with God per se. Like, everybody doesn't get to have a say to be like, well, God, I want this and with this, and I want you to do this, 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 this. There is an order. And so for those of us who follow in that and walk in that, there is an example of the order of looking to God as ahead of our lives.
Right.
And that being trickled down into our families and what our families look like. I'm not saying that one person dominates the other, but that there is an example of a figurehead leading the flock, if you will, or the family.
I think I understand what you're saying, and I mean, correct me, everyone, but it seems like they're just saying, like, even if that is what's dictated, like, if the woman naturally is better at certain things, then
that's not okay. So I have to stop, because we keep going back to this strengths, and I think what's not being, and I'm not questioning anyone's Christianity, but it is a very Christian belief system. It's a patriarchal system. Bottom line, it is what it is. It's a patriarchal system. It is very Christian. It is God first, then the husband, then the wife. No matter if you agree with it or not, that's the way it's set up, right? People kind of deviate from it here and there to fit their own comfort level, to kind of move with the times. But that's the way the structure is set up. I know several people, several marriages where that's the way it's set up. And it is a belief in the Christian community that there has to be a vision for your family. And your vision for your family doesn't really have anything to do with who manages money better. The vision of your family is like the direction that you're going.
I'm saying if the woman is better at determining the vision of the family, I know that's not the Christian way of doing it, but I think at least what I would argue is that you should do what works best, period. And maybe that doesn't quote unquote work for someone who doesn't believe that. But I would think that that was sort of what we were.
And I actually know a couple where it's not working, by the way, where there is a wife
who has proven over and over again that she is better with the vision. And the husband is trying to be the leader, and she is trying to support him. I mean, it's just creating, you know, but for them, their walk is him getting better and her helping him get better. Do you know what I mean? So,
and also sometimes, you know, in that realm, people have not had that discussion ahead of time, right? So there are a lot of times where people are like, we're getting married, we're going to get married, bam, we get into it. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, we want to follow this as how we live. And that is not a conversation you have after you've already gotten married. Because somebody may get in that marriage and be like, that's not going to work for me. I'm the better visionary than you, and I don't want to follow you.
Right.
And then if you believe in this Christian order, then first of all, you shouldn't be getting married to nobody who doesn't have the vision. Right?
That's step number one.
My girlfriend and I right now are very clear right now, like, brother, what's the vision? Because until you have the vision, I'm not following you. And so I have complete respect for that, because it's like, why no one should follow somebody that they don't believe in what they're purporting. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think what happens is a lot of people either get into marriages where they haven't even had that discussion. And to me, honestly, whether you're Christian or not Christian, I just feel like marriage, period, people don't have enough conversation about what they want, how they want it, how they want to raise their kids. Agreed. How they want to, what kind of faith they're going to have, how they're going to do their finances, if they ever want to move out of the country. And then what happens is all these conversations come up. Or what happens if you do lose the breast and you do lose the penis? And is our marriage only based on our sexual interaction? Could you be married to me for 30 more years and no, you don't get nothing? You don't get nothing. Is that all that our marriage is? Is that half of what our marriage is? Like, the other half is you love me, blah, blah, blah. And the other half is we get to have sex. So all those conversations need to happen in any relationship. And they're not happening, period, in our society. People are literally jumping on marriage bandwagon. And if there's anything I've learned in watching my friends, family members, and just watching society, is that, one, marriage is no joke. Mm-hmm. Marriage is no joke. And the thing that I'm learning most, I'm really grateful for, is I'm actually grateful for watching people in their difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of difficult times. And it's, we live in a society where you can literally jump ship on anything. If you don't like your meal, you can send it back. Boom. Mm-hmm. I'm out. I don't want this meal. Go get another meal. If you don't like your car, you can return in 10 days. You know what I'm saying? And when you talk about people's lives and their emotions and their hearts and families, you can't just be turning that in like, I'm good. I don't want to deal with that. Like, you have to really ask yourself, do I want to stick through it through thick and thin? Like, if there has been no other, let's just say for all of us that the deal breaker was infidelity. Mm-hmm. If there was no infidelity in your relationship, but for some reason the sex wasn't good, or they became alcoholic, addicted to drugs or whatever, all this stuff, could you and would you want to hang through all of that? And I think what's interesting when we talk about these previous generations of folks, I think they just had this desire to hang, you know, and they will push through regardless. And for us and our society and what choices you have, you don't have to hang. You don't have to push through. Right. You know what I mean? I look at, like, when I saw Ray, I know this is a weird thing to take away from Ray, but all I kept thinking was, why did she stay with him? He cheated on her all the time he was on the road. But then I kept thinking to myself, wow, they kept their family intact. I don't know what the dynamics of that is and how that affect their children, but there was something about this idea of, like, I love you. I love this family. We're going to get past this. And I don't know if people want to get past things. I think we want to jump from happiness to happiness to happiness. And I don't think happiness is permanent. I think you can get joy that's permanent, but I don't think happiness is a permanent. Like, it's a temporary situation,
right,
and you
right.
jump in and out of happiness, just like you jump in and out of sadness. Yes. And I'm like, when things are not easy, when it's not the happy time in your marriage, what do you cling to? What do you go to? What about them is worth staying?
Right.
I think that, you know, like, Western media and films and storytelling has really done a number on our perception of what love and romance and family is. I feel like, you know, like, this idea of, like, what it is for a man to court a woman, or, you know, these rules around dating and romance and all this other stuff. I really feel like films have done a number on our expectations. And we actually have come to believe that that's a reality. You know, this is how, this is what a man does when he courts you. And this is how a woman should behave in a relationship and, you know, to be chaste and be coy and, you know, to play these things, which again play into the roles. But I really do think that this whole, like the Disney princess fantasy has really fucked people up. Women, men, we have these expectations, this very romantic notion of what it is to be in love with somebody. And it doesn't include someone be having an ugly side. You know, there's this book that I absolutely love by Miguel Ruiz, and he wrote The Four Agreements. And the book is called The Mastery of Love. And he talks about how when we come together with someone, it's really six people at the table, not two, because there's the person you are in relation to the person across the table. There is the person you project yourself to be, and then the person you really are, you know? And I just feel like we've, like, I remember being in a relationship with someone who, if I walked outside right now, I got hit by a truck, I'd probably say he was the love of my life. And this is like 10 years ago. And when I look back at how much I rejected his gestures of love because it didn't look like what I thought, you know, love was supposed to look like. He wasn't into holding hands and giving roses and writing poems. But like the amount of music, I'm a child of a musician, and yet I learned more about music in his presence than anybody else. And music is important to me. You know, the films that I was exposed to, I'm a cinephile. The films I was exposed to in his presence, you know, he didn't talk a whole lot. He didn't talk a good game. He was not a romantic person, but he was one of the most loving people I've ever met. And it wasn't until the relationship was over that I could look back and say, God, I learned so much about myself, about the world, about what I like, what I don't like. And he really loved me. When I was in a place of crisis, he actually sat down and made a chart of my life for me. And so I feel like I was young. I feel like I was immature. So I did not appreciate his version of love. But I feel like we turn down a lot of love because it's not packaged, you know, in the way we've been brainwashed to believe love should look and how it should be presented to us. You know,
Rada, can I just also say, I absolutely agree with you on that. One of the challenges I've had in my current relationship is that I had a romanticized idea of what, as a man, that I should do for a woman. And the problem is I've been with women in the past who have had all these expectations. And so you start to think, well, let me do this and bring this over into this relationship. And here I found this woman who was very simple, who just conversations with her mean the world. Not an edible arrangement on Friday at her job, not a shout out on the radio, not, you know, getting proposed
to in Abu
Dhabi. You know what I mean? Because you go on Facebook and you're like, dang, I don't even know. I mean, there's two people on Facebook right now. They be making you look like, well, am I up on top of my relationship? I mean, no, I don't cook every day for my woman. No, I don't. And you think, well, do I need to? But the thing about it, it goes back to knowing who you're in relationship with and having the conversation. Because if you know who you're in relationship with, they may never want you to make your relationship with them a public affair. And so, or a spectacle. So everything about your relationship may be very internal, it may be private, but it may be deep and it may be meaningful. And I absolutely agree with you. I personally have issue, while I enjoy Disneyland, now this may be oxymoronic, I love going to Disneyland, but I do take issue with this idea of fairy tale. That's never even been reality for a human like that. And for
it's
some
not
people,
attainable.
For some people, they've done it, and maybe they've been able to emulate it and have a moment where this is how they get proposed to. This is how, you know, you don't know, but I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Sometimes people put up a front of what it looks like, but it's not what it is. And that for me is probably the biggest challenge, I think, with relationships, specifically when you look at media and you look at you said film, but media, I really think about certain shows that are on that just make people feel like this is the norm, and they don't ever show sides. For instance, body image. Like, you will always see on a television show perfect bodies in bed having sex with each other. And I'm just like, having been in bed with, you know, several, you just don't look like that. And I've been with somebody who's soccer body, like, got bombed, but everybody, there's just imperfections. And there's something about not showing imperfection, and the fact that we buy into that and constantly consume that, it makes it problematic. Just, and you start to believe it. I don't care what anybody says. You keep watching it enough. You keep hearing it enough. You start to believe it. That's why black kids look at white dolls and think that white dolls are prettier than black.
You know what? You know what? I've been quote unquote thick, big, thickum, swole, whatever you want to call it, for quite some time in my life, and I've met several men, especially in my 20s, who I knew loved me and were in love with me. But because I didn't fit an aesthetic that they felt their homeboys would approve of, they didn't pursue a relationship, or they wanted to pursue something else on the low low. Right. But in public, I didn't fit the standard. And I think that's what I think the problem is. Again, getting back to the individual, like, I think some dudes pick women because they know their boys would fuck her.
Right.
Their boys think she's fine.
There's this Chris Brown song, if they ain't looking, I don't want her.
You know, but I think I think people have bought into an image. It bought into these ideas, into notions, and like, what do you really want? And how important is it that you get what you want up against what people think you should have? You know, I think that everything that we're saying today, it gets back to an individual's choice, and that person being courageous enough to say, this is what I like. Yeah. This is what I love. And I don't give a shit what anybody else thinks. That is hard to do for some people. Yeah. It really is. Rada. It's hard for the world.
People don't want to be individuals. People do not want to stand on whatever you believe, whatever you... Like, people don't want to stand on their awkwardness. They don't want to stand on the fact that you may be black. Like, I love Johnny Mathis, and I'll never be ashamed. I love me some Frank Sinatra.
I love it.
But I'm not going to be all hard to be like, oh, I listen to Scarface 24/7 to be, just so I can fit in with people. But that's the thing. People do not want to... They don't want to embrace the beauty of who they are. And that's the saddest thing about it, is that who you are as an individual, I believe you were created as that individual, and that individual is important. And if everybody recognized that, what's the poem that, I don't know if it was Marian Anderson, the one that everyone accredits to Nelson Mandela? Who are you to be by playing small to...
Who are you not to be?
Who you're not to be?
Yeah.
And I think I love that poem because I'm like, if you don't realize that there has never ever been a Rada, a Darius, a Shelby, a Kim, a Malcolm,
Alicia.
Forget my name. I'm trying to be awful foul. Or a Chris, or a Tash. And there never ever will be. That basically, when you are not yourself, you're denying the world what you were literally destined to be here for. And that is, to me, a deeper thought that people need to start taking hold of and being courageous about. Because what if you were here? What if you're the one person here to give whatever? To give smiles to everybody. And your smile does something to everybody that you touch. But because the world is like, nah, nigga, you need to be hard. Mm-hmm. Don't ever smile.
Right.
And the world is missing out on the most incredible blessing, to see a black man smile at another human being. But because you've been told don't do that, you don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can get that, the world literally could be changed for the better. That everybody's individuality, I'm agree with you with this, mm-hmm. that everybody's individuality is there's a reason for it. There is a reason why there is not a single fingerprint that will ever be duplicated like mine. Mm-hmm.
Right.
That is not coincidence.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then who are you not to be great and to be yourself? This has been like, we've got 15 topics.
No, but I think what you're saying brings us back to the first person we were talking about, Bruce Jenner. Like, regardless of what your religious or personal this person stepped out and said, this is who I am. And I don't completely understand it, but I have to applaud this person because they said, sorry, you know, institution, sorry, mainstream belief, sorry, sports world, sorry, ex-wives, this is who I am. And how can we be mad at somebody pursuing their truth? He said that. He said, I could not go to my grave.
Right.
I did not want to live another day in this lie. So I don't know. I think we did kind of come full circle.
Mm-hmm. Is that to me? And that's one situation where you are not seeing celebrity as any sort of benefit because right. he has to put this out to a public platform. Yeah, it's not just saying it to family, but I have to let the world know this is who I am. That's hard,
and the world feels comfortable sharing their opinion.
But you know what I actually think also, I don't understand it. I can't completely relate, but how many young people may not harm themselves because he declared that?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even if 1-10 people decide, oh, it's okay to have this confusion, reality, epiphany, whatever.
Or mother who says, maybe I don't want my kid to, you know. And
right. That might be one less parent disowning their child. I've also worked with young people who've been kicked out at 13 for saying that they're gay.
Yeah.
Which I will never understand that. But it may shift that person's level of fear or courage in stating the truth. And it may shift that parent who goes, oh, my God, you know, my child, wow, this is what they were going through. So I thought it was kind of revolutionary that he did that. Hmm.
Yeah, I just hope people get out of this is that, and you just have to be yourself. I mean, as much as society pushes for everybody just to fit in, and you see the messages all the time about just fitting in, at the same time, if you pay attention, society loves people who go against the grain. They may never embrace them at the moment, but they're going to forever be pushing Steve Jobs, Albert Einstein, all these people who are different, Dr. King, everybody who's decided to just go against the grain. Right. But it's one of the things that I don't like it in the moment. I don't agree with it, but it ends up making a huge change that people later on are grateful that that person came out and did it. Even in the moment, they're like, the people that were there in the moment are like, I don't understand it. It makes a big impact at the end, and we're all grateful. So I just think you have to really be yourself.
Mm-hmm. All right, y'all. We thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Black Is Break. Be sure to tune in next time. Peace.
2 hours. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Is Break. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. Hit us up, let us know what you think. You can reach us on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, on Twitter at Black Is Online. You can hit us up via email at kc@blackisonline.com. Leave a message on the hotline, 323-455-4219. You can always check us out on our website, blackisonline.com. Thanks again.